I love it. A lot of laughter here that goes on, so we are not at Glenlot. So now it gives me great pleasure to introduce Quincy from LA, who is our main speaker this evening.
Like, is my dress in my butt? Sorry. Would have been really funny, though. Oh, hi, my name's Quincy. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Brenda. I want to thank Annette so much for asking me to come up and share. It is always an honor and a privilege to come up here. I love this group. I've been here a couple of times, and it's great to see some familiar faces. So thank you so much for having me. I want to welcome anybody who's new to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you find the greatest adventure of your life, as I have. Didn't know that's what I was looking for, didn't know that's what I would find, and I'm so grateful for my life. So I hope that you find what I've found here. And happy birthday to all the birthday people. There's so much time in this room, and that's such a great feeling. You know, it's the longer I stay here, the harder it is to find rooms with a lot of time in it. And, you know, there's so much tradition in time, and it's so important for us to stay here and make sure that the new people know how to carry these traditions forward. So I'm super grateful for all the old timers that are here tonight. I'll give you some important information so you can judge me properly. My sobriety date is February 1st, 1988. I was 18 years old when I got sober for the second time. I just celebrated 31 years of sobriety.
It's really hard to say.
You know, there used to be a time when I used to get up here and be like, oh my God, I have so much time sober. And now I say that and I'm like, it just means I'm really old. You know, if you stay around and you don't die, you get a lot of time sober. And that's kind of what I've done. My sponsor is Leslie E., and my home group is Principles Before Personalities Big Book Study on Thursday nights in Sherman Oaks, California. So if you're ever in the neighborhood on a Thursday night at 7:30 and you need somewhere to go, feel free to come find us. Just holler. We'll come get you. And yeah, those are my important things. I want to thank Darwin for speaking as well. We have so many things in common. I, too, am here with my newcomer, or not newcomer, but my... boyfriend, who we also just celebrated 1 month together. This will be the first time he hears me talk, and hopefully he's still my boyfriend at the end of the meeting. So thank you, baby, for coming with me. You know, I always hate starting my story. It's kind of like marital sex, right? It's awkward to start, but once you get into it, it's kind of fun. And I grew up in Encino. My father was the love of my life. He was an alcoholic. He was the most amazing man I'd ever known in my life. And he was a designer. He used to design album covers, and he worked in the music business. So we had a lot of very interesting, he had a lot of very interesting friends. And growing up at my house, I didn't know that there was anything wrong with how I grew up. I thought everybody had the same things happening in their house that I had happening in mine. But I loved my childhood. I didn't know that there was anything wrong with it, so I didn't have anything to compare it to, I guess. But my father was a drunk, and he was the kind of guy who had a blood alcohol level of like 1,000 at any given moment. And he would pass out every night and wake up drunk and start all over again. And he was fun. He was a lot of fun. He was always about having a good time. Our house was the party house. He was friends with a lot of big rock stars, and they would show up at our house on a tour bus, get off, stay for a couple weeks, get back on and leave. And we had a lot of drinks called Skip and Go Nakeds, and we ate a lot of spaghetti. And that's really what I remember about it. But when they weren't there, you know, I had interesting chores as a child. I had chores that were, you know, I would take my little red wagon up to the liquor store every week and get his stash for the week, which usually consisted of 4 cases of Coors, 2 gallons of vodka, 2 gallons of scotch, and I usually got a candy bar for my efforts. And I didn't know chore that everybody had. I thought everybody did those things. And then usually the other chore for the weekend, we would have to take all the beer cans and we would squish them, right? And my sister and I would line them up down the driveway and get the sledgehammers and race to squish the beer cans so that we could take them to the recycler. And, you know, I say those things because they were fun. Like, that was part of my life being fun and having chores and all that kind of stuff. But normal people didn't have those kinds of things. And I didn't know that, you know? I don't remember my first drink. Growing up in an alcoholic home, it's really easy to have your first drink at any given moment. I have pictures of me in diapers with a beer can tipped up, so I'm not real clear on the first drink, but I am very, 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 very clear on the first drunk. And I remember like it was yesterday, because I remember very specifically who I was before that night and who I became after that night. And the kid that I was before that night was this kid who was toxically insecure, overwhelmed with anxiety, and extremely emotionally immature. And I didn't know that that's what I was, but I was constantly obsessed with what you were thinking about me, what I had to do to get you to like me, and if you liked me at any given moment. And so I was a kid who was taller than everybody else. I had boobs. They haven't grown since, but that's an outside issue. Well, one of them did, but again, that's an outside issue. And I just didn't fit in my skin very well, right? I didn't know how I felt. I didn't know how to deal with all of the stuff that was running through my head and the emotions that were running through my body. I had no skills on how to deal with any of those things. And I have a cousin who is 8 years older than me, and she loved to turn me on to stuff. She was one of those kind of people. And, you know, she taught me how to shave my head and what bands to like and how to tie my bondage pants, you know, important things. She was graduating from high school, and she was having a party, and she invited her little cousin to this party thinking, you know, you'll have a great time, it'll be so much fun. And I was so excited to be included with the big kids party, like, oh my God, I can't wait. But the second, like, she told me I was going, which was probably 5 minutes before I was going to get there, but I thought it was like a month, all I could think about was, am I cool enough? Am I funny enough? Does my butt look cute in these jeans? Like, is my hair right? Do I swear right? Do I like the bright pants? Like, I immediately became super, super obsessed with whether or not I was going to fit in and whether or not you were going to like me. And that was always my biggest torture, walking into any room, you know? I could walk into a room looking as cool as a cucumber, but on the inside I was on fire. And I walked into this room, and they were all sitting around a table playing quarters, Darwin. Yes, yes, they were. And I was 12 years old at this point, and I had never played quarters in my life, but my biggest fear is you thinking I'm stupid. So I walked in and sat down at this table like I'd been playing all 12 years of my life. I sat down and I started to drink, and all of a sudden that magical thing happened, right? The booze started to go into my system, and all of a sudden everything got lighter. Like, my arms got lighter, my chest got lighter, everything was funny, and all of a sudden all of that stuff that was going on between my ears stopped. And it was as quiet as that moment we just had, and that was magic. Right? That was what booze did for me. It made everything in here go away. Right? Did I become a daily drinker at 12? No. But did I become obsessed from that point forward with chasing that feeling? You betcha. You know? I started to do the things that kids need to do in order to make that stuff happen on a regular basis. I started stealing booze from my dad. Not that I really needed to. He liked to drink with me every once in a while, but I started to steal booze from him. I started to hang out with kids who were doing those kinds of things. I started to go to places and behave in ways that made sure that I could have that stuff on a regular basis. And it's funny, I was talking to somebody recently about the fact that, you know, my kids, I have kids that are 15 and 12, and my 15-year-old girl is a saint, but my 12-year-old boy is—he's me, he's me, and I love him madly, but he's me. But the thing is he's 12 years old, and he hasn't done 1/100th of the stuff that I have done by the time I was his age, which I'm super grateful for. But as it's been pointed out to me, he may be doing stuff I'm not aware of, pretty sure that's probably happening. But anyway, back to me. So I started to do things and started to hang out with people who were doing those kinds of things. And it was easy to find those people. They're super easy to find, because if you want to find them, they're right there. And I started hanging out in clubs in LA and sneaking out my window, like going and saying goodnight to my mom and my dad and going to my room, like laying down with all my clothes on, waiting for them to go in their room, sneaking out my window, catching a cab from the valley to the city and partying all night in the clubs with my friends. And I was doing this 3-4 nights a week. I'd come home 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, if I made it home, get up, go to school and act like everything was normal and get loaded at school. And it was just this cycle. It was something I was constantly chasing. You know, the thing I love about the Big Book is it really clearly explains what alcoholism is. And, you know, I didn't know what alcoholism was. I really believed for the longest time in my sobriety that alcoholism was a drug and alcohol problem. Really believed that. I believed that if you got rid of the drugs and the alcohol, that, you know, everything would be fine. It's a math equation. If that's the problem, then that's the answer. Just get rid of it. But if that was the truth, then things would have been okay once I got sober. I kept drinking and kept ending up in weird places and doing strange things, and I started to black out. And I know today that that's not a normal reaction for humans, number one, but it's definitely not a normal reaction for 14-year-olds, right? And I didn't mind the blacking out, right? Because I figure if I don't remember what happened, I can't be responsible for it. And I kind of liked that plan, right? If I don't know what happened, I don't need to know. But I had gone out with this one particular cousin a lot, and she was the one who I did most of my drinking with, and it started to get increasingly worse for me. My father's drinking was also getting increasingly worse, and as a result of his drinking, he ended up in rehab in 1981. And in 1981, going to rehab was super, super taboo. But if you worked in the music business, it was the kiss of death. And today you could go to rehab and come out with a record deal. Back then you come out and you're dead in the water. So he went to rehab, and as a result of him going to rehab, my mom was introduced to Al-Anon. And I want to welcome all the Al-Anons that are here as well. If it was not for Al-Anon family groups, I would not be standing in front of you today. I'm a little sad this weekend because the woman who was my family's Eskimo died on Friday. And she was the most amazing woman on the planet. I loved her. Anybody who knows the movie Auntie Mame, I'm sure anybody under 30 doesn't, but anybody who knows the movie Auntie Mame, she was my Auntie Mame. But she was the one who brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And as a result of my father going into rehab, my mom went to Al-Anon. And when she went to Al-Anon, she said, "Oh, do you have kids?" She was like, "Yeah, of course." She said, "Well, we have Al-Ateen. We have meetings for kids so that they can go and they can talk about alcoholism and learn about alcoholism." And I remember my mother coming home and saying, "Oh, you're going to be so excited to hear that there's these meetings that you can go and you can talk about your problems and you can go learn about alcoholism." And I remember thinking, "Lady, are you out of your mind? Like, you gave me this weird name and now you want me to go talk about how crazy stuff is in our house? I don't think so. Like, what planet are you living on?" Right? But I was 12, so I lost that battle. And I just remember thinking that if I'm going to go to this meeting, I'm going to go as faded as I can handle. And I got as stoned as I could get, and I got in the back seat of my mom's car. And the entire way over the hill, all I could think of is, "I'm not going to that meeting. I am going to walk the streets. I am going to rob a liquor store. I will sit in a bush. I will do anything, but I am not going inside that meeting." And she pulled up in front of the church, and I looked out the car window, and I saw the most beautiful boy I had ever seen in my entire life. Oh, and I went to Al-Ateen religiously for the next 7 years. This is a program of attraction rather than promotion. We don't really care what attracts you here, just stay. And I did. And I started going to Al-Ateen all the time, and it was fantastic. I became super involved in the convention committees because it was great. I would say to my mom, "Hey, all of my Al-Ateen friends, they're going to San Diego for the convention for the weekend. Can I go?" You know. And so she had no problem putting her 13-year-old daughter on the train from L.A. to San Diego with a couple $100 in her pocket and said, "Sure, go stay at the convention in a hotel room with 16 other Al-Ateens. Go right ahead." That makes perfect sense, right? You're at an A&A convention, like you're gonna be fine, right? So, you know, and I have a blossoming alcoholism problem, and so the fact that I ended up drunk, butt naked, covered in shaving cream at an AA convention really shouldn't shock any of you. Just saying. So, and that's what my alcoholism looks like when it's working, right? Like, I almost always blacked out, and I almost always woke up naked, just saying. I thought for a really long time I had a problem with clothes. I was just hot. You know? And I would love to say that the naked problem stopped when I got sober. It didn't. Anyway, my drinking and using started to get progressively worse, and it became all I thought about, it became all I could focus on, and I was willing to go to any lengths to get as drunk as I possibly could, because I don't know about you, but the more I drank and the more I was willing to do, the more shame I had to push down and the more pain I had to get rid of, and the harder and harder it got for me to get drunk. And that cousin who was 8 years older than me, she took me to a bar one night. I was 15 and a half years old. And we went to some bar in Santa Monica and we started drinking, and I had looked at my watch, and we were doing outside issues as well, I'm sure. And I had looked at my watch and it was around 10:30, and these guys had just started talking to us. And the next thing I knew, it was 5:30 the next morning, and I was in the alley across the street from Grumman's Chinese Theater with my clothes torn and blood all over me, sleeping next to a bum. And at 15 and a half years old, that's not normal. You know, that's not normal. And because I had been in the meetings of Alateen, and because I had been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew that the reaction I was having to alcohol was not normal. The people that I was drinking with were not waking up in alleys. They were not blacking out. They were not having the experiences that I was having. I had a very, very strong physical allergy to alcohol. And so I decided to get sober, right? Because I really believed that I could make that decision. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get sober. But again, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous believing that this is a drug and alcohol problem. So if I get rid of the drugs and alcohol, then the problem will take care of itself, right? But if you're anything like me, the problem gets worse, right? And the second you take my drugs and my alcohol away, all of a sudden, all that toxic insecurity, that overwhelming anxiety, and that emotional immaturity comes rushing back to the surface and starts trying to run my life. And all of a sudden, I'm lying to you to make you like me. I'm sleeping with you to get you to like me. I'm stealing with you to get you to like me. I have absolutely no moral compass. I have absolutely no skills on how to deal with life. And I am making a mess everywhere. And one more time, the shame is building up. And the spiral is starting to happen. And I don't know how to get out from under it. And I'm going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm sitting in the back, right? And, you know, you guys would say, get a sponsor. And so I would hear some great speaker, and I'd go up to her after the meeting, and I'd be like, hey, will you sponsor me? And she'd give me her phone number, and I'd be like, great, I got a sponsor. Great, congratulations, right? I had a whole box of sponsors, right? Like, I had so many sponsors in this box. It was fantastic, you know? But I didn't know what to do with it. What do you do with it? Dress it up, put it on your bed? Like, what do you do with a sponsor? I had no idea, right? Because I didn't go to meetings where they taught me how to cultivate a relationship with anybody. Like, I took hostages, for crying out loud. You know, hog ties and duct tape were usually in my car at any given moment. So I didn't know how to have a relationship with anybody, right? But I'm going to meetings and I'm making decisions based on self that are later going to put me in a position to be hurt, and my life is starting to blow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know about you, but my alcoholism always, always, always shows up in me needing to be right about how wrong you are, right? I am a mastermind at building a case about how wrong you are. And the reason I'm a mastermind at that is because if I can be right about how wrong you are, then I don't have to change. And I don't know about you, but I ain't into changing. I'm into changing you, but I ain't into changing me, right? I'm all about changing you, right? So the easiest thing you can give an alcoholic besides a drink is a resentment. And so I copped a resentment at somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started building the case against Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, you know, I don't need to be here. I was 18 years old at this time. And y'all are drama queens and gossip mongers, and I am too, but we're not talking about me. We are talking about you, and I don't need to be here, right? And once my case was solid, within 20 minutes of solidifying that case, I was out and off to the races one more time. And my drinking didn't pick up where I left off. It picked up where it was. I went from blacking out here and there once in a while to blacking out for almost the entire 6 months that I was out there. You know, because I don't know about you, but there is nothing worse than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. The amount you have to drink to make that go away is astonishing, you know, and to keep it away, because it's kind of like fungus, right? Like, it just keeps coming. And I was drunk for a long time, and there's not a lot that I remember about being out. I remember I remember going out. I remember the night that I went out. I was at some big Hollywood wedding, and I took a drink. A drink took me, and that was all I remember, you know. And I have moments where I remember, you know, waking up here naked, waking up in some parking garage in Santa Monica in the back of somebody's car, naked, have no idea how I got, always naked, just add naked to the end of any sentence I say. And naked. And I don't know what it was about clothes, but anyway. But when I woke up on February 1st of 1988, I was pissed. I was so pissed. You know, I was trying to die. I was trying to die. I believe today that I was trying to die, because if you're anything like me, falling victim to the beliefs that I was having, I was never going to amount to anything. My life was worth nothing. I don't know how to be here, and I'm too chicken to do it on my own. And I'm not sure if you figured this out about me or not, but I'm kind of a mouthy broad. And I was hoping to die by suicide by your hand, right? I was hoping you would kill me. And how I didn't end up in the trunk of somebody's car thrown off the, you know, Santa Monica Pier is still beyond me, but that's what I was aiming for. I would fight with anybody. I would mouth off to anybody, anywhere, you know? But I woke up on February 1st pissed off. And I was pissed off because I wasn't dead. And I was pissed off because I also knew that it didn't work anymore. It didn't work. I believe I was struck sober. I didn't choose to get sober. I didn't even want to get sober. I wasn't trying to get sober. I came to sober. And I cried. I cried a lot that morning. But I said a prayer that I believe every alcoholic says at one point or another, which is, help me. I had never said help me before, ever. And I went in my room and I detoxed for a couple of days, and my mom finally beat my door down, being the good, beautiful Al-Anon that she is. And she said, you need to go to a meeting. And I remember thinking, I am so not never going back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, no, I'm not sitting in those meetings. I am not doing it, right? But if you're anything like me, I can't stand to be alone with myself for very long. So I put on my best bikini top and my best Daisy Dukes and my candies, and I got myself to a meeting. And you know, and somehow y'all knew I was new. Not sure which part it was, but somehow y'all knew I was new. And you remembered my name. You're like, hey, Quince, what's happening? And I was like, the fact that anybody remembered my name or included me in anything was a miracle, because at that point, nobody ever wanted to talk to me about anything. They'd be like, come on, Quince, let's go to this meeting. Or come on, Quince, we're going to a dance at the Platonic Temple. Let's go. Or, you know, whatever it was. Like, and let's go do this or let's go do that. And all of a sudden, I was starting to be included in all this stuff. So if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I encourage you strongly to get a posse, you know? Like, if it was not for all of the people, all the people, the young people that I connected to when I got here, I don't know that I would have stayed. I didn't want to learn about God. I didn't want to learn about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I needed to know that I was going to get to Alcoholics Anonymous and not die of boredom. That's what I needed to know. And I didn't. I would like to die of boredom a little bit now, but I don't have time. Sorry, it's not on the schedule, right, babe? So I started hanging out with a bunch of people, and somewhere around 60 days, some crusty old timer decided to give me his opinion without being asked for it. You have any crusty old guys in here? You got like 20. I'm counting like 20 crusty old guys in here. Look out for them crusty old guys. That's all I'm going to say, right? This crusty old guy walks up to me and he's like, you need to get a job. I was like, whoa, 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 old guy. Shh. Shh, shh, shh. Do not say these things to me. He said, what do you mean I need to get a job? He goes, look, you got way too much time on your hands, kid. And if you don't get a job, you're going to drink. And he scared me to death, right? I'm like, I didn't ask for this, but I'm like, oh God, what do I do, right? And I had a girlfriend who was in rehab at the time, and she'd invited me to come to the rehab so she could make amends to me. And so I go to the rehab, and I'm sitting there and see all these people just sitting around talking about A&A and the 12 steps, and they're having a good time. They're just sitting around talking, and I'm thinking, I can sit around and talk all day long, right? So I go and I get myself an application, and at the top of the application it said, what's your sobriety date? Well, I don't know about you, but I fancy myself a leader and see myself running vast enterprises with the utmost of assurance. And I would prove to the world that I was important, right? Just like Bill W., right? So I thought if I put down my original sobriety date, they'd give me a better job, right? So I put down my original sobriety date, and they give me a job. I mean, the truth is you have no clue how sober I am. I'm only as sober as I tell you I am, right? Nobody's standing at the door going, oh, Quincy's here today. Oh, Quincy's here tomorrow. Nobody's doing that, right? It's the honor system with alcoholics. That's an oxymoron. What's it called? An oxymoron. Thank you. Did I say that right? That's just dumb. Anyway. We need a little bit more accountability. So they give me a job and it's great. Like, this job saved my life, right? I was working 12 to 16 hours a day, strapping kids to beds, throwing them in the druggy buggy, taking them to a different meeting every night. It was fantastic, right? Because I didn't want to go to the same meeting every night. I didn't want anybody to know my name. Like, I was going to stay here long enough just so I could get the heat off, just so people would, like, stop, you know, being mad at me, and then I was going to go back to doing what I usually do, right? Because that's, I'm running the show here. I know how to do this, right? I know how to clean up, right? So I'm going and doing all this stuff, and I'm super, super busy, and all of a sudden, it's February 1st, 1989. And I'm driving to work going, oh my God, like, you have a year sober today. Like, holy cow. I had to really think about what I was going to say there. And, And I was like, oh my God, like, you have a year sober. Like, the time flew all of a sudden, right? But I didn't know what to do. I had been living a lie the whole time, and I didn't know how to get out of the lie, right? I don't have a sponsor. I don't have a program. I don't have any tools, right? I'm a liar, a cheat, and a thief by nature. That's just what I do, right? So how do I get out of this, right? So I thought, you know, I'll just get drunk. Bunch of judgmental people. Like, you all came up with that idea too. Don't be liars. I'll just drink, right? Because I can do that. I'll just drink, not understanding that I've never had one of anything in my entire life, right? Not one drink, not one cookie, one cigarette, one boyfriend. I don't do one, right? It's the loneliest number, by the way. And understanding alcoholism. I didn't understand that if I pick up the drink picks me up and I'm on my way, right? But I came up with this plan, and my plan was I was going to drink after work. And I walked into work and my head just must have been hanging. And this girl I had never seen before, she goes, oh my God, you look like hell. I was like, oh, nice to meet you too. She said, what's your deal? I said, well, I have a year sober today. And I was stunned because I've never told the truth before. Ever. But all of a sudden, some girl I've never seen before, all of a sudden the truth just comes flying out. I couldn't stop it, right? She goes, oh my God, that's so exciting. She's like jumping all over the place. She's like, you have a year. I'm like, what? She's like, what? I go, I have a year, but everybody just saw me take a cake for 4 years a month ago. She thought that shit was as funny as you guys did. I'm like, this is my life we're talking about. She goes, trust me, nobody is thinking about you as much as you are. That stunned me for weeks. I was like, wait, what? What does that mean? I don't understand what that means, right? And I tell that story because it talks about in the back of the big book in the spiritual experience, it says, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are the essentials for recovery. Essentials, which means we cannot recover without them. But there's a huge difference between physical sobriety and emotional, mental, and spiritual recovery. They're not the same. I did not know this, right? You can be physically sober on just one of those, on willingness. Just be willing to not pick up a drink or a drug, and you will be physically sober forever. Just be willing, right? But if you want to recover from all the other stuff, all the ism, all the toxic insecurity, the emotional immaturity and the overwhelming anxiety, you need all three. And it would take me years and years and years to understand that. But I started to get honest. And when I got honest that day, I experienced freedom for the first time ever sober. Ever. I don't know if you're anything like me, but when I do something good, I want a reward. Y'all relate, right? And I had seen my reward, and I had to have him. He was so cute.
but they don't really like it when you date the patients. But I had to have him.
So I was going to quit my job because I had to have the newcomer. So me and the newcomer, we're going to move in. Oh, y'all know how this ends? Just checking. Me and the newcomer, we're going to move in together, right? The day we're supposed to move in together, I pull up to the house. We had rented a house. We got all kinds of furniture. We were so excited! And I got to the house and there was a post-it note on the door. It said, "Sorry, babe, split town with my pregnant ex-girlfriend." Oh, yeah. I lost my mind. I was, oh my God, I had snot and stuff flying everywhere. I was crying. I didn't know what to do. I had no skills. I was freaking out. My best friend was standing next to me. She goes, "Oh my God, you need a sponsor." I go, "Do you know one?" She goes, "Yeah." She goes, "My stepmom, she's a sponsor. Let's go talk to her." I go, "Take me right away." Like she's a genie or something. Right? So she takes me to her stepmom's house and I'm crying and snot's flying. I'm like, "I don't have a job and I don't have a boyfriend and I don't know what to do." And she goes, "I have the perfect solution for you." I said, "Oh my God, I'll do anything. Tell me, I'll do anything. Whatever I need to do, just tell me. What do I got to do?" She said, "Well, Quincy," she said, "I think you would be a great stripper." Now she's an A&A. She's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I thought that was an AA suggestion. I didn't know it wasn't. I didn't know, right? I was dumb. I was young. Oh, I was so young. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. So she said, you should be a stripper. And I said, "Oh, okay." So I found somebody in AA to make me a fake ID because I wasn't even old enough to be a stripper. And then I went down and I got a job at the club and I had a great time, right? I hooked up with all the other sober strippers. We were this little posse of sober strippers and we would go four-wheeling and, you know, we got a bunch of the old guys, to teach us how to play pool, and we learned how to hustle pool and played in pool tournaments all over the state of Arizona and California and Nevada and had the time of our lives, right? It was actually a really great time. And we would all go to meetings together, but we didn't have a sponsor. We were just being the sober stripper posse. And I don't know if you're anything like me, but if I am unaccountable and unattended for, eventually I will start to make decisions based on self that will later place me in a position to hurt and all kinds of stuff will explode and I'll have to start all over again, right? So I'm best friends with the lead stripper of this club and she has decided to leave the business and join the circus. True story. And we were going to throw a going away party for her, and at the going away party for her, her boyfriend was there. And her boyfriend was a sometime boyfriend. Like, he was her boyfriend when she felt like it, but not always. And when she wasn't with him, she would tell him that she was with me. And he knew she wasn't with me, but I had to cover for her because we're the sober stripper posse. And so at the party, he comes up to me and he says, "You know, she's going out of town. We really don't need to keep harboring these resentments. Why don't we have coffee and mend fences?" I said, "Sure, why not? Call me." So me and the boyfriend get together and mend some fences. And then mend a little more. Y'all know how this ends too, I'm sure. And all of a sudden, right, we're in a full-blown relationship, right? And let's be very clear. I went from making $1,000 a day to making $7 a day, right? It's real hard to live on $7 a day in 1994, even living at your mama's house, right? And let's be very clear. There are rules amongst strippers and hoes. And those rules are you don't ever date your friend's boyfriend, whether she likes him or not, right? And so I had a very, very, very spiritual awakening on that one. And all of a sudden, I was one more time realizing that my behavior was out of control. One more time, right? But did I get a sponsor? Nope. Did I start reading the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Nope. What do you do when you're a used up stripper? Where do you go? You become a real estate agent, of course. I learned my lesson, and I never made those mistakes again, and I skipped happily into the world of the 12 steps and sobriety and serenity and all of that stuff, right? But I didn't, right? I came into Alcoholics Anonymous falling victim to the belief that this was a drug and alcohol problem, right? If I believe that this is a drug and alcohol problem, then I should be able to get rid of the drugs and the alcohol, and the problems will go away, right? Well, I figured so many of my problems died of neglect as a result of getting sober. Lots of them, right? All of a sudden, I wasn't waking up in places I didn't know anymore. Now I was just waking up in places, right? So my life changed as a result of getting sober, but I did not understand what real alcoholism was about. It would take me the first 13 years of my sobriety to understand and be willing to do this somebody else's way. When I was 13 years sober, I was coming out of a relationship with a man who I had met in Alcoholics Anonymous, who at the time had been the love of my life, who had come back to live with me after his stripper wife was done with him, and he was loaded out of my mind, out of his mind, dealing drugs out of my apartment. And that was the best I could do at 12 years sobriety, being 100% unaccountable to anybody, right? And one more time, you guys were judging me behind my back, oh, and in front of my face too, and had all kinds of things to say about the life I was living, because even though I was still going to meetings, I was living a crazy, crazy life. And there were a lot of people that were concerned for my safety, but I was more concerned about me getting what I wanted than I was for my safety. And I started to build a resentment one more time against Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, y'all are drama queens and gossip mongers, and I am not, I am too, but we're not talking about me, remember, we're talking about you. Because again, if I can make you wrong, if I can be right about how wrong you are, then I don't have to change, right? But I walked into a meeting, and it was the last time I was ever going to go to another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was tired. I was tired of having the same stuff happen over and over again in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 13 years sober, and I was bored. And I walked into this meeting, and it was a big book study. And I had never really read the big book except to teach a boyfriend how to read, because if you're going to be with me, you got to read. And high standards I have. High standards. And And I walked into this meeting, and I went to this meeting because apparently the woman who was my sponsor, and apparently had been for 3 years, went to this meeting. I had no idea. And I walked into this meeting, and I'm sitting in the front, and crusty old timer at the front reads like 5 or 6 pages out of the book, and then he would pick on people to share. And he was really, really good at spotting broken. And that night they happened to be reading Two Wives, and which is one of my most favorite chapters. He was so good at spotting broken, he saw me and he was like, hey, you, happy pants, share. And I shared in the meeting, and I vomited all over the meeting about how much I hated Alcoholics Anonymous, how I didn't want to be here, how this stuff doesn't work, how I'm so sick and tired of, you know, having the same stuff happen over and over again, no matter where I was, no matter what meetings I was going to, I was tired. And at the end of the meeting, another one of my favorite crusty old timers walked up to me and he put his hand on my arm and he said, Quincy, he said, AA is full of sick people. Do not expect them to act well. And I knew in that moment that not only was he talking about you, he was talking about me. I was starting to have a spiritual experience in that room in that moment, right? And I was stunned, right? All of a sudden, my mind had opened up. All of a sudden, I was starting to see things a little bit differently. Because the next person that walked up to me was the craziest, scariest person I've ever met in my entire life. And she was crazy scary because she was the kind of woman whose entire deportment shouted that she had a real answer. And I don't know about you, but I had spent my whole life staying away from people with a real answer because I didn't really want one. But she walked right up to me and right through my force field, right? And she put her card in my hand and she said, Quincy, I'm really good at getting free of resentments and doing column work. And if you want some help with that, I can help you. And I remember thinking, what resentments is she talking about? I wasn't in a resentment. What are you talking about? Like, I couldn't identify a resentment if it jumped up and bit me. Like, that's how out of my mind I was. So I went up to the woman who was my sponsor and I said, listen, I'm dying from alcoholism and I could really use some direction. She said, well, Quincy, I sentence you to this meeting. Now, I don't know about you, but at that point, I had been going to meetings for 20 years. 20 years. And I was no freer of the bondage of self that lived between my ears in that moment than I was than when I had gotten here. You see, going to meetings to get recovery is kind of like watching porn to be a better lover. get some good ideas there, but if you don't get in there and do the work, it ain't happening. Just saying. I have a feeling there's some porn watchers in here. So I called the crazy scary lady, and I said, all right, what do I have to do? She said, I want you to write down who you're mad at and why you're mad at them, and then come to my house. I said, okay. Now here's my 30-second commercial. There is absolutely no wrong way to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous except to not work them. Period. End of story. Over and out. Every person in this room has gone through the steps in a different way, with a different interpretation, with different information. Every one of them is right. Every one of them. I have been the arrogant ass who has stood here and said, if you don't do it this way, you're not doing it right. It is not true. As long as you are seeking, as long as you are willing to make the effort, you are doing it correctly. But when I got Linda as a sponsor, I had never really been through the steps except to like read them off the wall. So I had off the wall sobriety, right?
Just saying.
So when Linda sat me down and she said, I want you to do this inventory and this is what it's going to look like. She said, I didn't know that I had never seen it this way and I was willing to do whatever it took. She said, the first person is who, the second column is why. The third column is how were you threatened, right? What instinct was threatened? How were you threatened? The fourth column was how did you participate in this resentment, right? Never looked at that part, not never, right? The fifth column was, what do you wish you could have done differently? I've never wished I could do anything differently, ever. I've never even asked that question prior to getting Linda as a sponsor, ever. Because remember, this is always about getting you to change. It was never about getting myself to change, right? The sixth column was, what fear stopped you from doing that? Because if I don't understand what fears are stopping me from my behavior, from behaving well, then I cannot change them. The fear is what motivates the bad behavior, and if I don't know how to identify it, it will continue to happen. And she said, and then the seventh column is how do you behave as a result of those fears? And it was an equation, and I hate to tell you, that's algebra. So if you don't think you're using algebra, Alcoholics Anonymous is full of algebra. But but that was the equation she gave me for freedom. You see, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous broken and tortured and toxic. And I didn't know what I was going to get when I came here. So if you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I welcome you to the greatest experience of your life. But be very clear about what Alcoholics Anonymous is offering. Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion, only offers one thing, and that is freedom. And if you are looking for freedom, you're in the right place. Thank you.
Give Quincy one more hand.